You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Friday, 16 April. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters, Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, chatting with Viv Govender from Rand Swiss. I want to touch on the Coinbase listing. I don't know if they've dug into it. Maybe these IPOs are a dime a dozen and they ignore it. Or is there perhaps something there? And Rand, 1420. Dave Nemeth, founder of Trend Forward, rethinking the role of the mall. We've talked around a couple of guests on this. I want to dig more into that. And then Chris Sabaskakhni, CEO of FNB Card. Consumer spending trends under lockdown. Our poll yesterday, we were chatting with Chris Rule from Core Shares around cash in your portfolio. We asked you, do you hold cash in your portfolio? 21% on MoneyWeb, on the Twitter and LinkedIn results. 21% nope, like to be invested. 34% yes for opportunities. 28% for an emergency. That's where I sit. And then the 17% said, wish I had some cash. MoneyWeb Now, brought to you by Orbvest, a global real estate company that has a hyper-focus on acquiring stable, income-producing medical buildings in the USA. Investors use Orbvest's online platform to invest directly into low-risk commercial real estate, primarily in the healthcare niche in the USA, from as little as $5,000. Some morning headlines, MoneyWeb. Sasol reveals renewable energy procurement plans. Man, they should have done this instead of spending, what, $10, $12 billion on Lake Charles. CNBC, China says its economy grew 18.3% in the first quarter, and that slightly missed expectations. Morning markets, US was green, S&P up 1.1%, NASDAQ up 1.3%. Asia mixed, Sydney off 0.4%, and Tokyo up 0.3%. Commodities also mixed, gold 1763, Rand 1420. Top 40, looking for a green open, but 30 points higher, 0.05%.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Viv Govender. He is, of course, a portfolio manager at Rand Swiss. Viv, morning. Appreciate your time. I don't know if you and your team have looked at the Coinbase, which obviously is a crypto exchange. It listed earlier this week. It's been around since 2012. I didn't realize it had been around for so long. But it's actually profitable, and it's been a massive IPO. I mean, the stock's sort of double what it IPO'd at. Have you had a look? Is this something which you think is investable, or is it just sort of more the crazy part of the market in terms of valuations?
I think it might be investable, but the valuation has gone far too high. I think at the moment, just because of the success we're seeing in prices like Bitcoin and so on, you're seeing strange things happening like NFTs, which it's very difficult to find a valuation on an NFT that makes any kind of sense. I mean, for those that don't know, an NFT is a non-fungible token, and you see people not just sell paintings with these non-fungible tokens, but tweets like Jack
Dorsey's.
Yeah, he sold his first tweet. What does it mean to sell an NFT on your first tweet? I mean, it's a very strange concept. Most people don't get their minds around. I think that's the kind of stuff that we are seeing around Coinbase. Look, I mean, we do need to have some kind of stability in the market. And if we do have, Bitcoin remain above $1 trillion in valuation, your Coinbase is going to be a valuable company. But you are asking a lot of assumptions to back up that valuation.
Yeah, almost. I mean, it makes me think of, an example would perhaps be Amazon from 1999. I mean, Amazon did eventually make a profit and did eventually get above those dot-com prices, but it took 15 years. And it kind of feels the same. And a lot of companies, of course, aren't going to make those 15 years, the sort of hype space we're seeing right now. And I mean, Jack Dorsey's tweet, with respect, is not worth anything ever.
And if it was, if Jack Dorsey's tweet was worth something, what would the NFT on the tweet mean? The NFT doesn't give you ownership of the tweet. It doesn't give you basically the ability to go and publish that tweet. It doesn't give you a copyright of the tweet. He could turn out tomorrow and create another NFT on the same tweet, and it would not make any difference in any way to your NFT. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's a very weird kind of thing. Yeah, look, I mean, with regards to Coinbase and to the crypto kind of, most major thing at the moment, it's very difficult to get a valuation that you know for certain. Looking at Amazon, I mean, Amazon at least had a model that basically would have worked, over time.
Yeah.
But there was no fear that, books suddenly would become valueless. People would stop reading. And that's Coinbase's difference with Amazon.
Yeah, and I mean, the stock's already, so it touched 430 on its first day, and then it closed its second day at 320. There's already been some pain there in that Coinbase. Quickly touch on the ZAR, strong overnight, traded 1416 overnight, 1420 this morning. I saw an email come out from you guys at Rand Swiss around the sort of consensus fair value and the like, but one thing our Rand does do is go to sort of parts of the pricing which is unexpected, and I mean, we should expect the unexpected, and we could see the rank could go sub 14 in the next week, or truthfully, it could go back to 15.
Oh, yeah, most certainly. I mean, if you looked at the range of expectations from the big financial institutions, there's multiple round differences for the 12-month outlook. You know, some say, but 13, some say, is, you know, above like the 16, 17, even 12 months from now. It's very difficult to know exactly what to expect. I mean, one thing to note is that, you know, until about, say, 40, 50 or something, you could argue quite easily that it wasn't the case of the rand basically coming back quite strongly. Look at where it was at the start of last year. Look at where it was right now. That was like the normal inflation rate. Yes, in between it went from like, you know, 40 to 19. It came back to 40 to 50, but 40 to 40 to 50 is like the normal inflation rate over a period of a year. So I think that was one thing. But now that we're getting to new levels here, these medium drivers justifying it, yeah. And I am a bit concerned because there still remain some issues around the South African economy. And the rand strengthening, you know, significantly from here is I think maybe overdoing it on the strength side.
Yeah, no, I take your point there. It's Viv Govender, portfolio manager at Rand Swiss. Appreciate your early morning.
You've worked hard to accumulate wealth, but with these uncertain times, how can you preserve and grow your wealth in a safer place? Offshore, while earning regular quarterly dividends in US dollars. The solution is here. Hundreds of investors from across South Africa are investing in specialized medical real estate in the USA, sourced by a highly skilled team who make it easy for you. Orbvest SA, an authorized FSP. Visit orbvest.com.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Turning now with Chris Labuschagne. He is CEO of FNB Card. Chris, morning. Appreciate the early morning. But I had a great note around sort of, you know, consumer spending in the delivery, video, music type business and sort of the online space. And certainly there has been a fairly significant, by your data, upsurge over sort of March of this year versus March of last year. It intuitively makes sense, but I mean, the numbers are staggering. I mean, the increases are, you know, in some cases, an order of magnitude of literally doubling over the period.
Morning, Simon. Yes, I think what's interesting, we're all aware of this trend of the Internet of Things and how customers are changing their behavior around shopping and how they entertain themselves and how they bank. And I think that trend has been emerging, but just massively exacerbated by obviously what happened during COVID. And I think driven by customers also spending more time at home, working at home, trying to entertain themselves at home. And I think that's added to the trend that we're seeing.
And this is a trend. I was chatting with the futurist last week, and he said, you know, I asked him, how do we change what we do and how we do it as a society? And he said, we need to experience it. We need to try it first. And a lot of people, you know, have now for the first time, you know, signed up for a Netflix or perhaps a YouTube Music, or as the case may be. And they've tried it and they quite like it. And this trend is now going to be quite solidly entrenched. I saw a survey from MasterCard saying more than half of South Africans are now shopping online.
Yes, and even if you look at some of the large retailers in SA as well, they're all investing in this capability of shop online and deliver at home. And those trends, I think, are now firmly established, and we expect that to continue even post-COVID. I guess the challenge we do have as a country is just our dependency on internet and data.
Yeah.
So that everyone can get access to these awesome services.
Does it add challenges to you and your team at FNB Card in the sense of, you know, if I'm shopping at a bricks and mortar, it you know, the security risk is lower. It's not gone, but there's always that risk, particularly in the online environment, where I put my card into just a dodgy or a phishing site or something. Has it added complexity, or is it just sort of what you were seeing, but perhaps to slightly increased numbers?
We as a bank know that we have to evolve and innovate with the internet. and the solutions we put in place. So that's why you see FNB and many of the other banks coming out with a solution around virtual card.
Mm-hmm.
So where you log in securely behind your own app, you take your card number there, you put it into an online shopping site. And what we now do at FNB, you get an in-app notification to say approve or decline that this transaction. Because we recognize that trust is key part of this ecosystem around on online shopping. So the onus is on us to keep innovating, right?
Yeah, no, I hear you on that, and it is. It's not even keeping a step ahead of the bad guys. It's just actually just making it simpler and more user friendly for the clients there, and truthfully safer. Well, one of the things that struck me, and if we look at, for example, the home delivery, Mr. Delivery was Mr. D, as they call themselves, big largest increase. Uber Eats remains the largest business in the space. But what you were saying, sort of no major change in the average amount that customers were spending on takeout. They're just doing it a heck lot more often.
Yes, and I think again to what we spoke about earlier, very, very much driven by COVID and people staying at home and trying to entertain themselves, and instead of eating out, eating at home. But that trend's going to continue. And I think what's also interesting about the stats that we're showing is that it's a mix, obviously, of local service providers and also international. So just the ease of which customers can now get access to these massive global service providers, the likes of Netflix, Uber, and then balance with some good local products and services as well.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, we look at, if you look at the video subscriptions, Netflix was up 64%, but Showmax was right there, up 78%. Music, we don't really have a compatible, but as you point out as well, Mr. Delivery really going toe-to-toe with Uber Eats. I mean, it really is a sense of we have the local homegrown, and our consumers are able to choose. We'll leave that there. Appreciate the time. Chris Labuschagne, CEO, FNB Card. Appreciate the early morning, sir.
MoneyWeb now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with David Nemeth. He is founder of Trend Forward. Dave, appreciate your early morning time. You wrote a great piece, Rethinking the Role of the Mall. I've chatted with some of the property listed property companies around this. I mean, just my previous guest talking around how, you know, so much more is happening online. The pandemic, the lockdown forced us into areas we might not have normally been comfortable with, but we had no choice. We couldn't leave home. We had to learn how to sort of use the online part, and malls took a hit, and they're really going to need to figure out how they fit into the sort of new reality as we move forward.
Good morning, Simon, and thank you very much. And yes, it's quite right. We're well aware that we were forced to go online. So even those that were very, very uncomfortable doing this were forced into a situation they're now comfortable with it. I think it is important to say that brick and mortar will never die.
Yeah.
We need to understand that, okay? There's been a lot of reports with the death of the mall and the death of brick and mortar. That's not going to happen. But malls at this point in time, a lot of them are in serious trouble. I mean, you can see it. Go to any of your big malls and you just see empty stores, which you've probably never seen before.
Yeah, and that's the point. I mean, malls need the foot traffic in order to attract the tenants. They need the tenants in order to attract the foot traffic. It's that sort of, you know, never-ending circle, and they've got to resolve this issue. You know, if I'm gonna buy something, they need to attract me to that bricks and mortar, and it's going to be the experience. Because if I'm buying, let's say I'm buying a vinyl LP or whatever it might be, a pair of shoes or something, I can do it online. I can do it bricks and mortar. That experience is what's going to be the difference.
Well, this is exactly it. And I think a lot of mall owners are kind of leaving that up to the individual retailers. And we see retailers really trying to push the boundaries and have a wonderful online presence, doing virtual things and sort of doing whatever they can. But that's not good enough if the mall isn't attracting people to it. So the mall has to start thinking as if it were a retailer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really going to have to start doing things that they've never done before. You know, I speak about having an online store which is linked to the mall itself. And obviously, that is a very costly exercise, and you couldn't put every single product on. But you could curate monthly products theme-based, for instance. events that are online. But yep. The malls, it's no longer good enough to just have an online presence and to be saying, you know what, visit this store they've got a sale on, or visit that store they've got a sale on. They're going to have to reach out and say, come to us because this is what we can do for you.
I get that, because it's not just, you know, I mean, I sit here in Joburg and I've got a preponderance of malls I can go to, and they want me to go to their particular mall. Now, let's assume they've got the tenant mix that appeals to me. They've got to make that appeal. You talk around ideas of, you know, which I love the idea, it's sort of a space within malls, you know, almost maybe having a park in a sense. You know, those food courts are, they're not attractive places. Yes, you eat there because it's convenient, but make it something that's attractive. Make it, you know, you could do, I don't know, picnics. Sort of get people saying, hey, let's go spend, you know, some hours, maybe a day at the mall, rather than just pop and grab what you need and exit again.
Well, that's exactly it. And they've got to become far more human-centric. I mean, they can't just base themselves on what's happening internationally. We as South Africans, love the outdoors. We like open spaces.
Mm-hmm.
I speak about biophilia. Biophilia is a trend whereby we're bringing plants into the indoors. So whether it's park areas or whatever it is, but cater for a full day's outing. Cater for people being able to do things that don't necessarily have to cost an arm and a leg, and they will end up spending in your mall anyway.
Yep, and they'll spend that time there, and they'll entertain, and it'll be a space where we can actually have fun. I mean, this is, I mean, we're talking here. I mean, some of these are quick, easy wins. You talk around, you know, it's sort of in a sense having themes. It's just been April, so we do an Easter theme. It's coming into autumn, spring, you know, on the other side. Those are the easier wins. Some of this is going to, however, take a fair challenge in terms of time, in terms of budget for these malls, in terms of fundamentally changing how they currently exist and look.
Correct. And I think the key here is for each and every one of the bigger malls is to start putting project teams together, which includes outside people, inside people, mm-hmm. outside marketers, you name it, and go all the way from the quick wins to the stuff that's really going to cost a lot of money and maybe a 5 to 10 year plan, but start having a plan of what to do. And I don't believe the mall owners at the moment have a concrete plan. I think it's a hit and miss. And let's have a quick concert and, you know, let's put up a big screen and show some movies. It's not good enough. Yeah, there has to be a strategic plan here.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. You've answered. I was going to say, are we seeing it happen? And the answer is, maybe we're not. Folks are still, it's still kind of a hit and miss. They need to get, as you say, a better strategic plan, a bigger long-term. But like that key point, bricks and mortar is not going away, but how are you going to get me to your bricks and mortar versus the one down the road? Dave Nemeth, really appreciate the time. Founder of Trend Forward.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
This show is brought to you by Orbvest's latest investment opportunity, Medical 32. It's a multi-tenanted Class A medical office building located in Jacksonville, Florida. For more information, visit orbvest.com. Orbvest SA is an authorized financial services provider, license number 50483. The poll that we're asking you today, and it's both on our Twitter and LinkedIn profiles, you can find it on either and vote on either. Chatting with Viv about the Rand as a trade down to, what, 1420 against the USD. And he seems to suspect that it could, you know, this might be a blip in the plan. I remember early 2000s, December 2001, Iran hit 1361, and a couple of years later it was 575. It was a massive move, and it was driven in large part by strengthening commodity prices. We mine them in dollars and sell them in dollars and bring those rands back. We've got maybe the same things happening here. So the question to you is, can the Rand go much stronger in the years ahead? Answers, maybe a little, yes, much stronger. No, this won't last, or perhaps impossible to forecast. Truthfully, impossible to forecast. I think it can go stronger. I think a lot stronger. Sub 12, sub 11, crazy, but not impossible. That's it for today. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. And the podcast available from 7 a.m. wherever you get great podcasts, or again on the MoneyWeb website and app. Huge thanks to my team, Eddie, Kudora, Nicole, Matapela, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again Monday.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.